From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Racine Theatre Guild will hold open auditions for Lombardi on Monday, August 20th and Tuesday, August 21st. The play is about the legendary Green Bay Packer Vince Lombardi. For complete details, visit racinetheatre.org/audition.
This is WGTD-FM. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jess Sheeler, an outreach and career transition specialist at Job Corps, Steve Brown, assistant professor of education leadership at UW-Oshkosh, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. I'm Jess Sheeler for Education Matters. It's Saturday. And in the station with me this morning is Dr. Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College since 2006, who oversees the college's 65 academic programs, Jonathan Delagrave, who was elected the Racine County Executive April 2015, and Corey Mason, who was elected the mayor of Racine in 2017. Prior to that, he represented the 66th Assembly District of Racine starting in 2007. So good morning and thank you for joining me.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jess.
So today, you know, what brings me to want to interview you all, and I'm very thankful that you are here, is that there have been several articles written in June, which was why I was 2 months behind, in a lot of newspapers talking about how you, the city of Racine, so you folks, were just awarded a large amount, $1.5 million, correct, for training. And reading these different articles, it looked as if those training sessions were going to be divided into not only construction, but first a focus on water utility. So let's talk about that grant money and, you know, where do we start with this training?
Well, I think we just have to mention that obviously our region, southeastern Wisconsin, particularly Racine County, is seeing unprecedented opportunities for jobs. And the challenge now is to upskill those individuals to be able to be employed and improve their lives. Family-sustaining jobs are key. And, you know, as county executive, I believe that this opportunity is to be able to lift people from poverty to middle class and middle class to upper middle class and so on and so forth. So with that, you need resources, and those resources are what we're talking about here today. So we're really excited about the opportunity.
And just as the mayor of the city, it's first of all, to start, the city is really fortunate to have great partners like Gateway Technical College and Racine County, who've been in this space for a long time. The city has seen a lot of loss of manufacturing jobs over the last generation. And so when we look at Foxconn's arrival to the area, it really engenders this discussion about lots and lots of jobs, thousands of jobs coming to the area. But as we've been working on for years, there's this the skills gap that exists. And so we know that the jobs that are coming first will likely be in construction, that there's a lot of interstate work to do. There's over $100 million worth of water utility work to do, and it's before anybody even swings a hammer to build the Foxconn facility, mm-hmm. right? So there's literally billions of dollars of infrastructure that needs to be built along with the facility itself. So that's an opportunity for thousands of jobs. But if we don't match our residents with the skills they need to do those jobs, mm-hmm. those jobs might as well be 500 miles away, right? So what we have before us is this great opportunity to do this Racine Works project, to match up with all the great work that Gateway's already done with partners like Big Step and First Choice, and to match up the great work that the county's doing with its Uplift 900 efforts to employ more people in the city. And it really asks the question, how are we going to get people into these construction trades jobs? Because we know that they're all family-supporting jobs, mm-hmm. and we know that they require training. So that's what we have in front of us. But, you run for office at the end of the day because you want to improve people's lives, and certainly getting people into good-paying jobs is a key component to that. And so as the mayor of the city, that's certainly something I'm committed to, but I'm also humbled by the fact that I couldn't the city can't do this alone. We need great partners like the county and the technical college so that we can all embrace this great opportunity that's come to the area.
Yeah, I think the mayor's right, along with the county executive. When you think about the important role that funding like this plays, it helps to not only elevate the conversation in our community on the importance of training and really speaks to what might be the DNA of Gateway. We've been a support service for our community for over 100 years and really founded on the premise that there is an opportunity for citizens to upgrade their skills and advance their lives through training and get the jobs that are going to help support their families. I think this effort now that Foxconn has brought to us and a broader perspective, the entire region, you can't help notice all of the development that's going on, whether it's an expansion of Incinerator or the great work that's being done right now in the counties to help advocate for new companies moving to our area. So legacy companies, new companies, all spur opportunities driven by training. And training today is quite a bit different than it was even 5 years ago as we look to new skill sets in advanced manufacturing, construction trades. And this particular initiative, supported by the governor's Fast Forward proposal, really helps to set the seed for continued growth for Racine.
So you brought up a good point that we have legacy companies as well as this new giant, I would say, elephant in the room that everybody keeps talking about, Foxconn. What makes this Foxconn project such a new world sort of thing? What makes it different than, say, making sure that people have training just to be able to work at a legacy company? You know, it is a giant undertaking that I think the whole southeastern Wisconsin is going to be impacted by. But what makes this new and unique that we need to push now to ensure that sustainable jobs are there?
Yeah, I think there's probably several reasons. One certainly is the size of it, and I think the county executive can help better describe the magnitude of the opportunity here. But for us at Gateway, it's really helping us to clarify and focus what training and what types of skill sets are going to be required for the future, but are actually impacting the types of jobs that are available today. So we talk about it in our world as Industry 4.0 or the Industrial Internet of Things and its advanced manufacturing and automation and robotics. And while we've had pieces of that already in our curriculum, this has really elevated our timeline to ensure that we're developing the skill sets that are going to allow technicians to be able to analyze data and leverage data so that machines can become more efficient, which ultimately means the companies can be more efficient. When you think about how quickly 100 years has gone by from, I guess it's called Industry 1.0, which is the leveraging of steam to produce products on an assembly line, to Industry 2.0, which was to create mass production systems, to Industry 3.0, which is the integration of computers, programmable logical controllers, PLCs. We talk about a lot in CNC machining, to today, Industry 4.0, when machines are talking to each other and sharing data back and forth, and you can do predictive analysis. That's a completely different skill set and expectation that entry-level employees are going to need to have. So Gateway's been building out all of those new curricular areas and opening up new pathways for young people and adults that are already in the workforce to be able to gain those skills and be successful in emerging occupations.
Yeah, I think Dr. Albrook's right. I mean, it's the kinds of jobs that are new. It's the number of jobs that are coming and how quickly they are coming that makes just this endeavor much faster than I think. I mean, we're doing everything we can as quickly as we can to prepare for what's coming. But I think it's easy to underestimate just how big the changes are going to be.
Well, and with Foxconn is the future. They are on the cusp of technological advances, whether it's through making glass or through healthcare. So to have that opportunity to have those really technological advances in our community is great. And then, you know, you're talking about $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, an average of $58,000 a year for these jobs. I mean, what a great opportunity for individuals in our communities to be able to do that. So it is huge, as Dr. Albrecht and the mayor said, but we're lucky to have the opportunity.
Yeah, I think it really speaks to the regionalism of the whole area. So we work closely with colleges and schools all over the southeast Wisconsin region, including Milwaukee and Waukesha, Janesville, Beloit, Madison. So everyone has an opportunity to really become engaged in developing this, what's being coined as an ecosystem throughout Southeast Wisconsin, and leverage supply chain and give legacy companies an opportunity to be a part of the Foxconn build-out. And so that whole idea of a transformation within the region is really helping to shape our conversations throughout the entire region and really help build stronger alliances for both legacy and new companies in our area.
So my question, Corey, because you had mentioned that, you know, there will be a lot of jobs coming in, and because right now we're seeing, as far as unemployment, it's almost turned upside down, that there seems to be more jobs currently than people. Have there been conversations, or has this been discussed? How many jobs are we anticipating with the rollout of this project? And you said that construction is going to start first. And we talk about implementing, you know, this money into a training program and construction being the first to go. You know, you had said 165, right? Unemployed folks are going to be the focus of the training, and 15 incumbent city workers to start with that. Was there conversation with Foxconn or currently companies that have the contracts to start building as to what they need, and will that then be applied and developed into those training programs?
Yeah, so absolutely. So we've identified two sort of state-certified apprenticeship programs that Gateway's worked with and the city's worked with in the past, and I think the county as well. But, you know, for people who are ready to go today to be apprenticed into the building trades jobs, whether that's as a carpenter or a laborer or an iron worker or you name it, you know, you basically need to have a valid driver's license, a high school diploma, the ability to do at least 10th grade math, and pass a drug test, right? So if you can do that now, you might not need some of this pre-apprenticeship training. And if you've had, you know, some good work experience, you could potentially move up pretty quickly into it. But what we find is that there's a need to sort of address some of those barriers to employment that people have. So these programs, Big Step and First Choice, that we've been working with, already have a track record of doing that. So certainly First Choice had made its reputation here 10 years ago when they expanded the interstate then, and certainly Big Steps had a big presence in Milwaukee and doing inclusive hiring around the Bucks Project and the Northwestern Mutual Life Project. So we're bringing good local expertise to the area, people who know how to get people skilled up. But it is, you know, I mean, the interesting thing about the water utility work, it's more than $100 million worth of water utility work that we need to do. You know, in normal times, that would be big news, right? But, you know, given all the interstate expansion that we have to do and, you know, a multi-billion dollar facility that Foxconn's going to build before you get to any of the ancillary work, it's sort of a footnote in it. So it's sort of amazing. But whether it's talking to our contractors at the water utility or others, what we hear is, boy, you know, if you call the hiring halls at the labor unions and ask for a dozen laborers, what you're going to find is everybody's working, right? So there's a real supply and demand problem around skilled workers who can get into it. At the same time, what we've noticed is even as unemployment goes down, in some of our neighborhoods, poverty's staying stubbornly still, right? So what's so important about these jobs is not only does it fill the demand for what employers are going to need now, it moves people into the middle class, right? And so it's this great opportunity if we can resource the ability to get people over their barriers and do a course, not over the course of 2 years, but over the course of several weeks where they're pre-apprenticed and then able to go to a hiring hall or be hired by a contractor who wants some skilled workers to be able to build this stuff. And so the training dollars really do a couple things that are important. They do the training in and of itself, but then a third of the money is actually incentive wages to subsidize $7.25 an hour of the graduates of those programs for those employers who might be wondering, well, you know, this person's new, they might not have a lot of experience.
So like an OJT.
It is, actually.
Okay.
It is. So it's giving additional job resources, much like the federal DOT does with highway projects. It incentivizes those employers to take people who are from these distressed areas and give them a real chance.
And I think it's important to recognize, too, that the idea of a skilled worker shortage happened before Foxconn came to our area. So there have always been high demand for technical skills and apprenticeable types of trades. In fact, Gateway has over a 90% job placement rate for our graduates. We like to say the 1% or the other 10%, 1 out of 10, probably goes into a transfer program off to a university. So there are great skills that are available and great jobs in our community. This really heightened the awareness for the alignment of those skills with the types of jobs that are now developing and emerging in our community. And if any of our listeners had a chance to go see the open house at Foxconn, it was eye-opening itself, just the technology. But behind all the technology was a production line making televisions. And the vast majority of those workers were Gateway students. So we've worked very hard to develop the content in partnership with Foxconn and other companies to ensure that our graduates are meeting the expectations of those employers with those new skill sets. And I think that's really where we can serve our community better, is to continue those conversations and help foster that direct alignment with skills and jobs.
So my next question, and I'm glad, Corey, that you brought it up, because you talked about the lingering poverty in certain communities, the barriers that already exist in regards to soft skills. And I've heard, Big Step and the other apprenticeship program that you're working with. Where does the Workforce Development Center come into play? Because there are already a numerous amount of training programs to assist folks with bridging that gap from poverty into middle class. With the Food Share Employment and Training Program that's run by ResCare, the Workforce Innovative and Opportunity Act, Job Corps, which is another pre-apprenticeship program, United Migrant Opportunity Services, or UMOS. So what is going to be new and innovative about what you want to do with your grant as far as training? What's going to be different? I ask questions in threes. And will you utilize those already existing programs and tie them into the fold as far as workforce development partnership is concerned?
So with the Workforce Development Center, a couple of things. One, it's our responsibility as a county to make sure that we're leveraging all our resources and aligning our programs so we don't have any duplication. Three of the county's initiatives that are somewhat different is we have the Uplift 900 program, which is basically our goal at the county from even before Foxconn was to try to get the city's unemployment rate to match the state's. And we drilled down the data, and right now it's about 550 people. So if we got 550 individuals sustainably employed in the city's unemployment rate drops to the state, which would be just remarkable for our area and for our region. So that's what Uplift 900 is to take those individuals, get them employed, drop the unemployment rate, and understanding that they do have barriers, whether it's childcare or transportation, or they're a single female head of household and they have some issues to get to work on a consistent basis. So that's what Uplift 900 is. We are engaging in a manpower study for the first time. We are strategically assessing the talent supply and demand across multiple industries in Racine County. That will help identify where the gaps are, build a talent pipeline for companies, and career pathways for our residents and students. So Foxconn's great, and it's a huge opportunity, like we've said. However, our legacy companies are our number one priority in the county. We need to make sure that our workforce is good and that they can always continue to tap into really good workers so they can obviously keep their company sustainable and profitable. So we need to identify that talent pipeline. And then we have GreaterRacineAtWork.com. That's GreaterRacineAtWork.com, if I can do a shameless plug. And that identifies skills people have and matches them to opportunities that fit those skills. So it's a intensive case management software program that will allow individuals, look, if they fix their sink in their house, that's a skill. We're going to put it down, and so on and so forth. So those are three different things that we're going to do. But to answer your question, overall, it's our job to create programs that are tailor-fit to individuals so they can be employed sustainably.
really proud of the relationship that Gateway has with both the city and the county. And Jonathan mentioned several of those new partnerships in our area. One that I might highlight is the 509 GED program, which is a competency-based skilled development program to allow individuals to earn their high school credentials. And that has really been successful in helping take advantage of that credit for prior learning, the experiences that Jonathan referenced, and giving folks credit for that. But new to our community in partnership with Wisconsin Regional Training Partnership is Big Step. Mm-hmm. So we've opened up some new training programs on the Racine campus to help support and now built bridges between that program and our traditional certificate program, so a student can get those entry-level skills, maybe earn a GED, gain some pre-apprenticeship type skills, and transfer that into a technical certificate. So it really helps to build pathways of alignment between the services that are available for our students. And it's expanded quite a bit, with First Choice and the pre-apprenticeship program, and now with Big Steps pre-apprenticeship program, we're able to really open up new occupational training in operating engineering, civil engineering, and basic construction trades, which I think will continue to be a sound foundation for all of us in Southeast Wisconsin as we elevate the visibility for young people moving into apprenticeship careers.
So as we go forward, first, those who are just tuning in, you're listening to Education Matters here on 91.1 WGTD HD. And today with me is Dr. Brian Albrecht, Jonathan Delgrave, who is Racine's County Executive, and the Mayor of Racine, Corey Mason. We've talked a lot now about, the training that's available. Why is Racine where it is as far as unemployment is concerned? As people who sit in elected positions and you see your city struggling, where would you say, why does Racine have the highest unemployment rate, and where are these barriers?
Well, we could do a whole extra hour just on that.
I know.
long and short of it is Racine is and always has been a heavy manufacturing town, right? And so, when I was going to high school, kids graduated from high school, they could sort of have their pick of a factory job. They wouldn't be rich, but they'd be middle class. They get a UAW card and could work there for 35 years and do roughly the same job and be relatively secure economically. And that was kind of how Racine worked for most of the 20th century, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we're still a manufacturing powerhouse. It's still our biggest employment sector. But we've lost more than 15,000 good-paying manufacturing jobs in the last generation. And the jobs that have replaced it haven't always been those stable, high-wage jobs that have pension, high wages, benefits to get people into the middle class. And so, people talk about the last recession that hit 11 years ago, which we're still sort of recovering from, but we were hit really hard in the recession of 83 when there was a big manufacturing downturn. And, if you look around town, you can drive around and see where the factories used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those factories have gone to Mexico and China, right? And so there's this big discussion about trade and what it's meant, but you can point to specific examples in the Racine area where we haven't fared so well in a manufacturing level, where good-paying jobs left to go elsewhere. So for the better part of my adult life, we've sort of, it's Racine and Beloit that always seem to sort of lead the state in unemployment. And it's a distinction that I'd very much like to lose, which is why this time is such an important time around workforce development. Because now, as we've been talking about, boy, how are we going to get good-paying jobs to the area? Which, as somebody who's been knocking on doors in this town for 20 years, that's the question I've heard the most. When are good, solid, middle-class jobs coming back? How am I going to know that I can afford to raise my family here and have just basically a shot at the American dream? So when you look at what's coming, 11,000 construction jobs, 13,000 direct jobs, that's before you get to any of the ancillary jobs, and they appear to be family-supporting jobs, boy, that's an historic opportunity. But now we've got a generation of catch-up to do in a very short period of time to mm-hmm. make sure that they've got the skills to do that 4.0 manufacturing, that they've got the skills to be in the construction trades, and the myriad of other jobs, and to Jonathan's point, and that we've also got a workforce that can sustain those legacy companies that have been here. Case is perhaps the oldest mm-hmm. Company in the state. It did Industry 1.0. It made its fame on steam engine work, right? That's how it built itself in the 19th century, but it's still one of our biggest employers. We need to make sure that Case and SCJ and Modine and InSinkErator and Twin Disc, that's having its 100th anniversary this week, that they still get to thrive here too. So we're suddenly in a place really where we've gone from scarcity for a long time to a space of abundance, and we need to make sure that we get everybody to a place where we can really capture what's coming to the area so that everyone succeeds and that prosperity is broadly shared.
And I would say, I think it's important to note for those who are listening, we're talking about implementing training programs and getting people skilled to obtain a career, not just a job, correct?
Correct.
That, do you think that average people know what the difference between a job and a career is? Can we touch on that a little bit? Because I think that they're working with young people in workforce development. There has been a significant mentality change as to what work is. I go to work and that's my job and I have money and I'm not really thinking about the auxiliary things that come with it. I now have money to save for a house, a car, insurance, you know, those sorts of things. The folks I work with are just happy that they have a job and can, like, eat food. So let's talk about the difference between what a job and a career is and where the focus is as far as making sure people know these are careers that we're focusing on.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say real quick is that, you know, one of the things that the county has been able to do the last few years is to partner with Gateway and Racine Unified School District to show students what their future could be. We've had a See Your Future Expo where students mm-hmm. come in and look at all the different career sectors that are possible within the area, whether that's manufacturing or teaching or law enforcement. So to be able to see that, I think, is a big step. And then working with the school district to create academies, and those academies are placing students in interests that their interests are or what could potentially be their interests in those different career fields. So showing them early on what a career is, I think, is really helpful. And then obviously once they're in that career, creating sustainable wages and having that disposable income, as you said, is critical rather than living check to check. So getting to those students early is something that the county's proud of, working with the school district in Gateway. So that's one of the ways that we are showing what careers are versus what a job is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Jonathan's so right. I mean, you think about building pathways. This last academic year, over 6,000 high school students took college courses while they were in high school. So Gateway has built pathways all the way through the middle school, up through the high school, and now into the two-year program. We have 40 articulation agreements with the universities, so we know that we're helping build lifelong learning attitudes within our students that you need to continue on your pathway to explore your career. But something that I think if we step back a little bit, it's really about, you know, the questions often asked, you know, why Racine? And, well, you know, Racine has high unemployment stuff, but you can kind of reverse it. Racine is actually ahead of the curve now. So many communities, if not all communities, will go through some sort of transformation around the economy. And the economy is advancing so fast around a digital technology world. And Foxconn is making a highlighted focus right here in Racine to build this idea out of smart cities and innovation and bringing new talent to the region and thinking about our community differently than we have in the past. And I think that's really going to help to drive the ideals around lifelong learning and building career pathways and the talent attraction models and the types of things that are going to sustain growth for our region. And so I'm really proud of the fact that Racine is ahead of that curve and that we are able to share our experiences with other communities that will ultimately go through that same type of transformation. It's very similar to what Racine led our nation in 100 years ago. So mm-hmm. when you talk about S.C. Johnson and Case and Modine, that was a huge national infrastructure around manufacturing, and it's still considered one of the top regions in the country for manufacturing. It's right here in southeast Wisconsin. So now we can say also the digital economy, mm-hmm. and I think that really puts us in the right place.
So I'm glad that you said lifelong learning, because this is going to lead into my next question. So as we know, when people, you know, seek out either a training program to better themselves or they're going to Workforce Solutions because they have found themselves in a hard spot and they don't know where to go and they need help, and they do have one or more barriers to employment, which we've talked about, how do we engage those people to be lifelong learners? And what do we do about addressing soft skill issues that continue to keep people unemployed, that they couldn't go to a legacy employer, they can't keep a job because they don't know how to talk to people, they don't like being told what to do? Will the money that you guys have received that will be put into these training programs address that? Will there be a soft skills training incorporated into that? Because we have to fill that gap. We have to do something to help people who don't know how to talk to each other, who don't understand that it's not polite to be on your phone when you're being talked to. And guess what? Your boss isn't wrong, and you do have to show up to work on time. And if you don't have transportation, here's what we're going to do to address that. So what is going to be different and new about this? Will it be addressed, and will there be dollars afforded to give soft skills training?
So, huge issue, great point. I can tell you that at the Workforce Development Series, or Workforce Development Center, we have what we call workplace excellency modules. They're free to anybody. They're also at our libraries as well. Mm-hmm. And it addresses those issues for employers and for, obviously, the potential employee in terms of what is required in a workforce environment. Also, we are at Workforce Development Center. We do resume building, mock interviews, and also, again, really focusing on, look, you got to pass a drug test. You have to be able to interact with your supervisor in a professional way. So we have those training programs in place. But that Workforce Excellency series that I mentioned has really helped us in the last year working with those much-needed soft skills.
So will there be a bridge from this training program to that one so that if somebody who is participating in this training program for this $1.5 million, will there be a bridge if you see, hey, this case manager is working with this person in this training program, but guess what? You need some of these soft skills. Will that be something that is done to make sure that they're connected with it? Because I work in workforce development. We do all of those same things.
Yeah, there's actually several components to what this particular grant is going to be leveraging, and certainly those wraparound support services and connecting individuals not just to the training that's happening but to all of the other resources within the community, whether they're educational or some sort of social resource that might help them become more successful. I think it's important also to recognize that this is not a new phenomenon, that it's always been difficult to get people to be fluent, if you will, in basic employability skills. I think we can leverage that experience a little bit by having it demonstrated in the classroom. So the programs that are funded under this grant and other grants that are related have those core employability experiences built into it. So a pre-apprenticeship, they're going to be on the job. They're going to put hours in. They're going to work for a supervisor. They're going to get some of that practice mm-hmm. before they actually go out and get the job. In the curriculum, we embed the core competencies around basic communication skills so that we get a chance to have students practice that in the classroom. And I think that partnership idea, whether it's between the city, the county, or the employers, is going to help reinforce those types of competencies that individuals will gain as a result of going through the training programs. And, you know, this is one of several efforts that are being put forward throughout the Racine County area to help develop a talent workforce. This happens to be a large dollar investment, mm-hmm. and that dollar investment is going to be leveraging additional capacity, including increased skill sets for employers.
The last thing I just want to mention is that, look, and Brian and Corey had just talked about the regionalization, the cooperation in our area, is that whether it's the city or Gateway or the county, that we're going to be able to if an individual is let's just say working with the city in their employment program, the city will recognize, hey, maybe they need X, Y, and Z. The county offers that. They're going to be able to cycle that individual back to the county, so we don't have a duplication of services. We want to make sure that we're maximizing all our resources. So for the city's workforce initiative, especially with the construction, we don't want the county to be able to do something similar. Let's let them do what they do. We don't want duplication, as I said. So, but we can talk to each other and make sure that individual is getting the necessary resources from all, whether it's Gateway, the city, or the county, from all of us to be able to find the skills that they need.
And I also think this is a place where the partnerships become so important, right? Like part of one of our training programs that we're working with is actually at Gateway Technical College on the Racine campus, right? Mm-hmm. So it's literally embedded in the building where if you needed some other services, you're right there, mm-hmm. right? That was very much intentional, and Gateway deserves credit for creating that space to be able to do that. Similarly, you know, I think the county deserves more credit for the work that it's been doing, sort of align its workforce efforts around human services efforts and barriers that might exist to employment. So a lot of work that's been done in the background on this Uplift 900 effort to figure out, well, what are the barriers to employment and more ideally to these careers. And then the other thing that I would say is this evaluation tool that we're trying to use, this GreaterRacineAtWork.com, really is meant to sort of identify what those limitations are more quickly so that people don't fall through the cracks. So, you know, it used to be that if you came to a construction pre-apprenticeship program, they'd say, well, do you have a valid driver's license? Can you pass a drug test? Do you have a high school diploma? And if you couldn't say yes to all three, they'd say, well, go back and take care of that and come back when you've done that. We don't do that anymore. Now it's sort of like, well, how do we get people through their deficiencies that they might have for barriers so that they can be in a position to succeed in these programs and ultimately get employed through careers? And the other thing I'll just say about the technical college system, which I'm proud to say Racine was the first campus to have a technical college more than 100 years ago, but the system used to be called vocational technical training. And, you know, even though vocational isn't still in the name, this is the thing that the tech college system does very, very well. They don't just train people for a summer job and then hope it works out. They're training people and giving them skills so they can succeed for a career and ideally a lifetime. So there's a lot of alignment to do. There's more to be done. We talk about it, if not every day, at least every week, several times, trying to work through these things. But these are years-long challenges that we're going to have to overcome in a very short period of time.
Well, I was just going to say, an example that I think really came home true to me is that at a boot camp graduation, I met an individual who went through the boot camp. I think it was 16 weeks. And he had three kids. And the boot camp is obviously during the day through Monday through Friday. And I asked him, hey, how were you able to do the boot camp and still be able to work with your family needs and concerns and whatnot? And what it came down to is he had to work a 60-hour third shift at a group home. He had to then go to the boot camp during the day. And then had to raise his kids and get them to school and doctor's appointments and just meet their obviously basic needs. That's really hard to do. And so I think why the city and their initiatives are so great is that you have that subsidized wage, that transitional job opportunity. So people, while that individual went above and beyond and great, it's, you know, there's a lot of challenges there that we need to identify. So when people are in boot camps or they are in construction or pre-apprenticeship training, that they have their needs met while they are going through that. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges, and that's why this alignment is so critical.
As we're getting to the top of the hour, let's talk about how we're going to implement these training programs. When are programs going to be available? And how do you get involved? If I'm listening to this and I'm like, this sounds great, how do people get involved? Where do they start? When will it start? Talk about that, the implementation.
So programs are actually underway in both First Choice and Big Step. And so if people are interested in that, you could certainly contact either of those programs. But again, I would refer people to the website, which is
GreaterRacineAtWork.com.
Yes. And again, it allows you to do the evaluation tool and puts you in connection with all these programs that might be available. So programs are actually underway already. And so the challenge that we have is, can we scale them up quickly enough and can we recruit enough people through the program? And the other challenge that we've had in this is recruitment, right? Can we find enough people who want to do this work?
How do you recruit folks?
So, well, one of the, again, a shameless plug is we're having two job fests. Yep. On August 17th and August 31st in the city. One is at the King Center, and the other is at Knapp Elementary, our community-based school. Both in neighborhoods with higher concentration of unemployed or underemployed and with individuals with high, barriers to employment. These are family-oriented events with food and entertainment and whatnot, but they feature job training opportunities for community members, and that's critical. So we can get them, enroll them in GreaterRacineAtWork.com, and which is great is we can follow them from start to finish. If they fall off the track, we'll know why, and we'll get them back on the track. So Those are two outreach events that people can go to, and we really, you know, that's part of a broader recruitment program, but those are two specific initiatives on the recruitment issue.
Now, I would just add that at any time, if anyone wanted to come and see some of the training in action, they could head down to the Racine campus. There are folks there, career counselors, and the faculty and staff are available. We'd be happy to show them what the labs look like and talk to personnel that can help direct them a little bit better as far as their career choices. All of the programs, as Corey mentioned, are up and running, and those and many more opportunities are available. So if we can help engage people in finding their right pathway, we certainly want to do that.
And I just think lastly on that is that, you know, for the first time since I can remember, is we have opportunity and we have doors that can be open to individuals. So at the very least, if you can't make one of the job fests and you don't know what to do, you can just call my office. We'll direct you into the right pathway, because everybody in Racine County who wants a job should have a job, and that's where we're at right now. It's a great problem to have, but outreach is critical.
Is there eligibility requirements in order to enroll into these programs, and is there a requirement as far as education that will be required prior to being able to complete these programs successfully? You talked about needing, you know, a driver's license, being able to do 10th grade math so you can take an Accuplacer and things like that. Is that built into the application process?
Yeah, the idea is to get that from the outset, and if you're short on one of those concurrently through the program, try to meet those deficiencies. Almost all the building trades do require a GED.
Mm-hmm.
Some, not all do, but most do. All of them require you to be able to do some level of 10th grade math. Now, in full candor, if you put a 10th grade math test in front of me right now, I'm not sure how I would do. It's been more years than I'd like to say since I took 10th grade math. So, you know, some people might need a little brush up on those skills. So the idea is how do we get those things done concurrently? But passing a drug test, I mean, nobody's going to let you operate heavy machinery on a construction site if you can't pass a drug test,
mm-hmm.
right? A valid driver's license is just a critical component to be able to operate this machinery and do this work, and an indication of whether or not you can get to work on time.
Mm-hmm.
And getting at those education levels are barriers that are there, but again, we want to work with them concurrently on those programs. Those requirements are things that the profession requires mm-hmm. of its employees, and so we've got to get people to those places where they can achieve them. But again, there's great programs in place to partner with this job training, whether it's through the technical college or the county and their GED efforts and some of the other things that they have. It's absolutely a much different focus than it was 10 years ago, where we used to just say, you have to meet these criteria to walk in the door. Now it's acknowledging if we're going to meet the workforce needs,
mm-hmm.
we have to meet people where they are and get them to the place where they have those requisites to get into the profession.
So will Big Step help somebody get a driver's license?
So there will be driver's license recovery efforts that are underway that work in tandem.
What if you've never had a driver's license? And what is different about Big Step versus a Job Corps? That if you step in as an 18-year-old, you get your high school all on campus, you get your certification in a hard trade if you want it, you also get your driver's license, you have to pass a drug test to get into the program. What are the differences between those two? Real quick.
Real quick, we find driver's license recovery versus driver's license attainment is a much bigger issue, right? So
not for me in my experience.
Well, in the construction trades, that's the case, right? So for most people, the reason they don't have a valid driver's license has to do with a suspension
mm-hmm.
or revocation or a failure to pay fine. So when we do driver's license recovery, it's not so much about do they need to go to a driving school and get a driver's license because they've never had one. It's more they had a parking ticket, they didn't pay it, it got past a certain point, then their license got suspended. They might have multiple fines in multiple jurisdictions. That's actually the navigation that we have to do to get people through the barriers to get into this space. So maybe it's different when you're working with 18-year-olds who are less likely.
At 24, though.
I can't speak to that, but I can tell you if you're asking what's different, the experience for people getting into the trades,
mm-hmm.
it's more about driver's license recovery than attainment.
I could go on forever because that leads me into background issues and those justice involved. Will these training programs kind of force the hand of employers to now consider folks that have background issues?
Well, I think the answer to your question is we feel that Those individuals with background issues, particularly that have been incarcerated, whether it's jail or a prison, that's the low-hanging fruit. You know, I can give you an example of Steiber Company in Racine, or Steiber and Manufacturing. They are hiring those people who are coming out of a correction institution, and they're finding great success. That's low-hanging fruit. Those are the individuals that I think have a great opportunity, and those are ones that we want to reach out to.
And I would just say that we offer several programs already in the correctional facilities. So currently we have a partnership with Ellsworth Correctional Facility, training in CNC. We also with Racine Correctional Facility, we're training facility maintenance, culinary programming, CNC programming. So there are opportunities to help align the services of the training with any type of service that in our community, whether it's correctionals or whether it's, you know, the GED initiatives. And I think all of those assets together can help strengthen the opportunities for every individual to receive success here in Racine.
So we are out of time, but I want to thank you, Brian, Corey, and Jonathan, very, very much for coming on, discussing these new opportunities that are kind of flooding our community.